welcome to Adventures in Transformative Learning, a podcast for teachers and learners. Episode 4, live from the Bronx at Fordham University. This podcast is about life is about change, and learning with change can be transformative. Adults coping and learning through their daily lives and situations. Realizing the great ability to adapt to many situations, adult learning specialists have come to understand more about this experience. Through this podcast, we talk about everyday experiences and how we can understand how adults learn and cope. Dr. Barbara Hoyer from Graduate School of Education and Dr. Kathy King of the RETC and Grad School of Ed share interviews, discussions, insights, and stories of learning, change, and transformation. Listen in, send in your thoughts, and be part of the conversation. Don't miss out on the opportunity for learning about adventures in transformative learning. Our website is www.podcastforteachers.org/ATL. Well, today we have
Barbara Hoyer, hello.
And a guest appearance by
Steve D'Agostino, hello.
And this is Kathy King. We've gathered for our fourth episode of Adventures in Transformative Learning, and very excited to be here today.
We'll warm things up on this cold, cold December day.
Exactly. And Steve D'Agostino is no stranger to Fordham University. Steve is a graduate, a doctorate in administration and supervision.
That's correct, yeah. Educational Leadership, Administration, and Policy. They figure the longer the title, the more impressive it is, I think.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And he teaches in the School of Education. He's a administrator, program manager for a significant project here at the RETC, and he also teaches in the School of Business as an adjunct professor.
That's true.
So a very busy person with a lot of experience with adult learners, and that's the capacity that we've brought him in to be part of our podcast today. He has a lot of experience with transformative learning as well, coming from a different perspective, and so it's very interesting to hear his thoughts about this. This fourth episode brings us to a discussion of the final group of stages of transformative learning. We've been talking about the different groups of stages in Mesereau's original theory, and as they're grouped in the book series that I wrote on keeping pace with technology, you have the final group of them under new perspectives. And we've been talking about, Barbara and I have been talking about for a couple of weeks, about how transformative learning a lot of times starts with this disorienting dilemma that the field talks about. People kind of knocked off center, trying to make sense of their lives, go through a time, period of time of struggling with that, trying to make sense of their world, working through this sort of issue, finding different ways of looking at things, trying them out, seeing what fits, and then over time, gathering additional information to see how this might work in their lives and making choices about that. And what happens for some people is that they might go through that process and decide that they want to make a change, and they do want to, in fact, embrace an entirely new way of looking at the world and new decisions and even new roles. And a very significant step follows with that, because moving from just a cognitive or thought process, people have to actually take action. Mm-hmm. And this can be a very difficult step and can take quite a while to actually materialize. And we call it a process of reintegration. I refer to it as new perspectives. And it's an entire process in itself of realizing that new perspective, letting that sink down into your consciousness, taking hold of it, making it your own, and then stepping out and making those decisions in different parts of your life and bringing that together, the new perspective with the world that you've always lived in and in the new things that it's going to bring about. It can be a very complex process indeed for people. Mesereau's words, he talks about reintegration into one's life on the basis of conditions dictated by one's new perspective. And that's one way to describe that. Barbara, in this respect, what have you seen on that stage as far as reintegration? What sort of examples have you seen with that? What are your thoughts about this part of the process?
Well, I think it's important to point out that obviously we are social beings, and this reintegration is not something that we do by ourselves. And it may involve, along with this new cognitive perspective, it may involve changing our social situation, different contacts, different friends, different activities that we engage in. I mean, it's really a whole shift in perspective.
That's a very good point, because some of the other stages of transformative learning could be all very individualistic. Mm-hmm. Depending on your culture and the context and what you're dealing with, they could be all individual. But really, when you get to reintegration, it is going to involve more of your world in most situations. Mm-hmm. And that brings with it a whole cluster of, it could be issues, mm-hmm. and different dimensions with it. Mm-hmm. I really see this last stage almost, could almost flesh it out into a whole group of interactions. And you really get into having to look at each context as a separate one. You know, if you're dealing with family issues, or you're dealing with personal issues, if you're dealing with career choices, if you're, you know, it, just all the way down the line, you know, if it's life and death, like medical or health issues that you're dealing with, marital status, you know, these can be all along the spectrum of the things that adults run into and have to deal with along their lifespan. Mm-hmm. I think support is an issue that comes up at this point in a very much of a way. And support is not something in the educational realm. We think of student support services, and we usually think of something very specific with that. A lot of times educational institutions, and they say student support, they're thinking in terms of tutorial, and they're thinking in terms of career counseling.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, but when you think of transformative learning and you think of adult support systems, I think you really have to look at something much more holistic. And think about the kind of support that people might need. Mm-hmm. Looking at the life changes that people go through, and that might be included in transformative learning. Do either of you have ideas about the kind of support that adults might be looking for during this sort of process of trying to bring significant changes in their perspective to bear on their lives? What sort of support services might they be reaching out for?
Well, this may sound a little fuzzy, but it seems to me they're looking for someone to hear them, to just mm-hmm. listen, not to judge, but just to hear them verbalize their thoughts, mm-hmm. their doubts, their concerns. So it's almost something that can't be quantified so much, but it's in...
I think that what you were saying before about a lot of these changing, these transformational attributes of the process are internal and almost invisible. But by talking through them, they kind of give them a life. They become more real. And it's that kind of process of talking about these experiences, these internal kind of private experiences that gives a person a chance to kind of give them more reality and attach them to some kind of practice. And also, I think it's important to reach out to others who are also undergoing a kind of a transformation and to recognize that these individual experiences will be different, but elements of the process are really overlapping and similar. So that even though my transformation ultimately, my practice will change in different ways than someone else's, the kind of internal things I'm going through, what I'm feeling and what I'm concerned about, the parts of the process that give me joy and pleasure will be similar with other people, even though ultimately the outcome will be different.
Very important pieces. One there is something that we've mentioned, in previous episodes is the community piece, mm-hmm. and the comfort that you can take in knowing that other people are going through changes as well, and other people have traveled down this road, and they've survived, you know, and they've done well, and, and they've made it through, and that you can walk alongside people through that process.
Primarily, the adults I work with are teachers, and I think supporting them really manifests itself in giving them the space, you know, to kind of work through this process, to take some of the pressure off of them. Mm-hmm. Teaching is as at once isolating, but it's also, it also, at least contemporarily, has a lot of pressures to conform to strictures imposed from outside. So it's very hard to maintain a level of connectivity, because I do my work by myself, really, with children. And it's very hard also to get a sense of authenticity, because I'm following rules that are imposed on me from outside of my own particular context. So in terms of allowing the teachers to work through a transformational process, the major component of what we find to be successful is to respect that process for them and know that it'll be different for all of them, and to give them the space to work through it, knowing that even though it's not meaningful for me as an observer, that's not the important thing. The important thing is that that meaning has to be made in specific context for and by individuals embarking on their own process, really. And so that's kind of a cultural change, in certainly in public education, that teachers need to get a sense of having someone on their side while they do this.
Very important. A lot of the literature as well with transformative learning talks about this part of it as dialogue. And a couple of things that you've both mentioned too are the meaning-making aspect of it. And we find that very often in my writing and in my speaking and talking with people about my own experience, and what we find in working with learners is as you speak about it, as you share about it, as you discuss it, there's you understand it through the speaking, through the explaining. You, in fact, learn. And so there's a meaning-making.
You might have some unexpected insights just in verbalizing.
Exactly, yeah. You learn through the speaking. Right. And that's a very important piece that we don't get unless we're in community, unless we're in dialogue. And even so much that Mesereau felt that dialogue was an absolute requirement in the process of transformative learning. You could not separate it, that you had to have dialogue, just like you had to have action as an end result. You had to have dialogue as part of the process. And this would be part of the reason why. Now, a question would be whether in different cultures this is still the same, because in different cultures people approach things differently. Is it as much of a rational process? Is it as much of a cognitive process? Is it as much of an individualistic process? How is it manifest and experienced, and what is the process like in different cultures, different value systems, different orientations? And that is, I think, a very large area to pursue. But certainly, as we've experienced in our own culture in the U.S. and in the Western orientation, these are certainly ways that it makes sense and is experienced in our orientation thus far for many of us. Mm-hmm. But there's also, I don't know, Stephen, if you're aware, but there is a movement even in the U.S. of exploring the spiritual and more of the affective side as well, but also the spiritual and looking at other sides of transformative learning as to how people come in touch with other sides of their understanding and feelings, and growing in those areas and understanding
I think,
as well.
I think when you talk about this area of transformational learning, for me it's connected to kind of authenticity. How do sort of this project of looking for an authentic self, and how do I do that? And again, I mentioned I work with teachers, and teachers, that seems to be kind of what they're working toward. How do I connect my real self with my teaching self? How do I bring those different kinds of identities together so that when I'm standing before a group of learners, I'm authentically present in front of them? Because you know, the students look at you for 180 days, 8 hours a day, more than anyone else in your life. They know all about you. And that when you present a part of yourself that's not somehow real or true, then you're presenting them with an inauthentic learning experience. So then the question is, well, how do I do that? How do I maintain kind of a teacher mode, right? A teacher stance toward these people in my class, these children, and still be authentic with them about who I am as an individual. How do I get my values and beliefs into the learning opportunities that I'm creating while leaving space in there for these other learners to express themselves and their values and their beliefs? How does that work? Mm-hmm. What does that look like? And again, for, as you said before, the big culture, you know, the big C, but then there are smaller cultures in terms of, you know, the difference between middle school and high school, or mathematics classes and art classes. How do we work through these processes? And then what are the connections between, you know, learning about geometry and learning about myself? And how do I work through that? And in the project that we're working on now, the teachers are not in really, I think, in large measure in the reintegration phase, really. They're kind of affirming and connecting now with each other through a group collaborative process, really, and through an internal process of reflection. And I think they're beginning to see themselves as moving towards something. The scary part is, I think, for some of them, they don't really know what that something is.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they're excited about it because their day-to-day experiences in the classroom feel different to them. And for some of them who've been teaching, you know, for 10 or 15 years, this is really exciting for them. The way we do it in our project is through technology. We open up this kind of conversation about how can you do this differently? How can you do what you've always done before in a new and different way that's more connected to the students' ideas and their interests? But that conversation opens up this other world about, I'm learning with the students at the same time. I'm not necessarily expert of everything that happens in this learning environment. And it kind of destabilizes their understanding of what it means to be a teacher. And that, for them, is the catalyst to this process, really.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
Thinking about learners in different settings, all of us have taught undergrads and grads and professional development. Some of us have taught in different work settings. Mm-hmm. What are some examples of seeing this transformative learning in those students, in those learners, adult learners? You've given us some vivid examples of teachers and their mm-hmm. professional development in their workplace, dealing with the different issues that they're facing there. Where do you see it in other adult learners? What sort of transformational learning happens there? What sort of experiences have you folks had as educators or trainers?
Well, having just finished a semester course with some grad students, a very immediate example I have is students, I gave them an assignment which was a departure from the usual research paper, and they didn't understand the assignment. It was new to them. It was something they'd not done before. There was a lot of trepidation, a lot of fear, a lot of just unsteadiness. It was definitely a disorienting dilemma. We built up to the final project throughout the semester in sort of small
assignments.
Our
degree program tends to be that sort of disorienting dilemma entirely for them,
because
we tend to be non-traditional in a lot of our assignments. Yeah. So this is kind of like a microcosm of the whole experience. Yeah, okay.
But through the semester, many assignments that were going to lead to the ultimate final project, and there was much wringing of hands and many questions and doubt and a lot of emails going back and forth and, you know, what is Dr. Hoyer thinking or not thinking? And is she crazy? This is an impossible task. So lots of
I know exactly
discussion.
What course this is. Yeah.
Well, having just received the final projects, the students did wonderfully, and in talking to them, they were very pleased with the result and said very simply, I didn't think I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I have new confidence, basically.
Yeah.
And what, of course, was music to my ears, them saying, I have a better sense, even on when I'm venturing into the unknown, that I have a tactic to find my way. I have some strategies.
So it's way beyond the content area of that course. They've got an entire new set of strategies to deal with the unknown as to how to tackle a problem.
In this small area.
Yeah. That's an amazing experience. We have a couple of courses like that, but that one in particular, they come into that course and they are so frightened and daunted by the assignment, the ultimate capstone assignment of the course. They are so positive that they cannot do this. They are so sure that you spend the whole semester trying to calm down hysterical students, and you do. The way we deal with it is, Steve's laughing, we give them mini assignments that build all the way through the semester, trying to scaffold their skills all the way through and assure them that they can do this. And they come away with a fantastic project, which is an authentic, a real-life application. By the time they finish their degree, many of them come back to us later and say it was one of the most valuable courses that they ever took. Because the skill set that they learn in lifelong learning and also in the practical skills learned in the course, the content area, end up one of the most valuable in their adult education graduate program. And yet it's one of the ones that they fight against the most because they're frightened and they're so daunted by it. But it really is a vivid object lesson in the struggle that we have when we're facing the unknown and how much support we need along the way to be told that we can do it and we can get through this.
For adults, it's scarier to be confronted by what they don't know because you think you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't learn anything if you think you know. So the first step is to convince people that you know you really don't know.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
And that's okay.
That's an important point, Steve. Yeah. As adults, we're not given permission to not know. Many of us feel we don't have that permission. We have to be an authority. And that's really a shame.
What we do in our project is we won't tell them the answer.
Oh, my. That drives people up a wall.
Right. They just want to know. Just tell me what you want me to do and I'll do it. But we try to work with them through this process of them creating a project that's valuable for them in their context. For some of them, it's a huge struggle.
You're creating disorienting dilemmas in every direction.
Yeah.
You're just throwing people off kilter
and
constantly.
And our own disorienting dilemma, you know, it would be just easier if we just told them. Why don't we just tell them?
But that, I think, just to underscore, I think that speaks to this reintegration that we've been talking about because, Steve, your students' final projects, my students' final projects, they hopefully are meaningful to the individual student, and they're different. They're
not,
there isn't one right answer.
Right.
They have created these unique projects based on their interest, and the variety and the creativity is remarkable.
Exactly. And they very much mirror the reality of our lives as adults, and the reality of our lives as people with complex families, people with complex working situations, people with lives that in 2005, 2006, and going into the future are increasingly complex that we need to have successful ways to cope with. And none of these things that we are talking about have simple solutions, and they're none of them have solutions that happen in a day.
It's very interesting. And Todd, a course in the doctoral program in social theory. And my struggle was to get them to connect these abstract social theories with something that they're really interested in studying. And it's funny that they categorize their lives and their learning into these kind of buckets that don't intersect. You know, this is my family life, and this is my working life, and this is my academic life. And they don't think about studying a theory of something that it has real significance for themselves in some other part of their life. It's disconnected learning, you know. The struggle in this course was to get them to make a connection between an abstract social theory and something that they're really interested in the real world, to make it relevant.
Yeah.
Because I had a student who said, the very first night of class, I don't think theories are good for anything. So I said, well, that's a theory. Now you need a model and you can test it. But it's kind of that the way they approach their learning is not integrated, really. It's separate from other aspects of their life. And sometimes they're reluctant to make those kinds of connections because I think they understand on some subconscious level that if I really go into this thing too deeply, it's going to be difficult and painful. So I'm just going to do the reading and write the paper and go to the next thing. But when you make them slow down and really think about the implications of what they're learning in real terms, that can be difficult for them to embark upon something of that with that kind of seriousness attached to it. And that could be some of their reluctance initially.
So instead they build a barrier and keep themselves right. insulated from it in order to protect themselves.
Right. What does this have to do with anything?
Yeah.
You know, they try to keep themselves at arm's length because I'm in a safe place now in my life. I know all of these things. The world makes sense to me when I look at it in this way. And for you to ask me to look at the world in a whole other way, I'm not prepared to do that right now. You know, mm-hmm. I just want these three credits, really.
And what's on the test?
Exactly.
Right. Is it going to be on the exam?
How many pages does the paper have to be? And, you know.
So then our encouragement to educators is that something much greater than that can happen, that you can work with students. We've been sharing stories about how you can work with learners to
We haven't lost one yet.
And you can bring them beyond those points and bring them into a different way of learning and pursuing their studies. And that you can help them to develop successful strategies that will even go beyond the three-credit course and beyond the term paper and the content area. That will be lifelong learning strategies to help them in many ways. So we know that many of those students come back to us again and again, too, because they find in us somebody that's walking alongside them. And that's an important piece, I think, as well, that people recognize. So we'll be back very shortly for another episode of Adventures in Transformative Learning. Thank you very much for being with us, Stephen. Enjoyed you.
Thanks for having me.
And this has been Adventures in Transformative Learning, a podcast for teachers and learners, with your co-hosts,
Barbara Hoyer
and Kathy King. We'll be back with another episode very soon. But in the meantime, be sure to check out our website, podcastforteachers.org/ATL, to find adult learning resources and materials that supplement our shows and catch up on previous episodes. We also have the Transformative Learning e-library, and you can email us with your comments, suggestions, and examples of transformative learning at atlpodcast@gmail.com. This podcast is developed and produced by Fordham University's Regional Educational Technology Center in the Bronx, New York. Some of the music provided in this podcast is from Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.
It's like the satellite sisters in the world.